This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
One of the worst phrases in the English language has got to be, we have always done it this way. Boy, how many times have I heard that in the game of baseball? That is changing, hopefully, and it's a perfect phrase for this discussion that we're going to have today. It's an exciting one on ice when it comes to baseball, but also other sports. Is icing good for you? Does it hurt you? We're going to get into this very deep. We have a special guest. This is Pete Caliendo. I'm your host, Baseball Outside the Box. We have got a great show for you. We've got a 40-year veteran in sports medicine, Gary Reinel. We are excited about having him on the show. So buckle up your seatbelts because this is going to be a wild ride. You are listening to Baseball Outside the Box. And listen, special edition today. We are on Facebook Live. Welcome all our guests on Facebook Live. And we're also on YouTube Live. We're welcoming all. This is our first time on YouTube Live, and we're excited about the show. We want to get your feedback, so don't forget, email me at petercaliendo@icloud.com. Gary Reinel is on Twitter. He is called the Anti-Iceman on Twitter. You got to check it out. This is going to be a tremendous show. So now let's get started and welcome. Gary, welcome to the show, and thanks for being on, man.
I can't wait to start.
Yeah, this is going to be exciting because as I mentioned to you before, I was in, matter of fact, just got back from Russia, 10 days training players and coaches there. And during my time in Russia, I always listen to Jeff Kroshel, my great friend, Crush Performance. He's got an outstanding podcast also. And I was listening to your show and blown away. Now, I've heard last couple of years a little bit about icing. I've done some research. But then all of a sudden, I listened to you, and I said, man, this is the guy we've got to get on the show. So, again, thanks for being on.
Honestly, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Well, let's get started. Let's get right into it because this is going to be a great show. I can't wait. I want everybody around the world to understand this. So, first of all, let's just go into a little bit about your background and how you got into, researching ice and what it does for you, what it doesn't do for you.
An easy process. What happened, I represent a muscle recovery device called Mark Pro. And the trainers that I was working with, I work with over 100 professional athletic teams, were asking me, when's the best time to use your product? Before you ice, after you ice, while you're icing? And that's a pretty fair question back 10, 15 years ago. That was what everybody asked. So I used to give an answer that said, well, don't use ice the same time you're using me because ice is going one way, slowing things down, and activating your muscles is going the other way, speeding things up. So if you're going to do it, don't do it while you're using me. I prefer that you let me go first and use ice afterwards because I don't want to have to overcome what the ice has slowed down to get started again. So that was my answer. And honestly, that's just not a very good answer. And I was very disappointed every time I gave that answer, but it was becoming more frequent, the question. And I realized I had to do something. So I decided to start interviewing elite trainers, doctors, therapists. And I interviewed hundreds and hundreds of the top trainers, athletic trainers, physical therapists, team docs, sports medicine docs from all over the country. And when I say that, I'll tell you that I pay my way into all their national meetings and you get a chance to talk to these people. And then I went and traveled the country. Not that money matters, but I spent tens of thousands of dollars traveling the country from here to there and back to there and over here and then back again. During spring training, went met with the trainers in football, in hockey, in basketball, in soccer, MMA, boxing, Cirque Soleil. I mean, I just go everywhere where there are people doing intense work, physical work, and asked, what are you doing with ice? You know, how do you use it? Where do you use it? Why do you use it? And I got the answers from everyone, and I started seeing a pattern. And the pattern was there was no pattern. In other words, one trainer would say, well, I only use ice the day of the injury. And others would say, well, I use ice the entire rehab period after every session. And others would say, well, I only do it once a day for 15 minutes. And others would say, well, I do it 10 times a day for 30 minutes. And you had all of these different answers. Some people only used cold water and compression. Other people only used chipped ice. Some people wrapped it tightly after they iced. Some people didn't wrap it tightly. Some people put a very thick towel between the skin. Some people put a very thin barrier. Some people use cold air. Some people use cold water with like an ice bucket. And I went, there's just got to be a best way. There just has to be. So I set out to become, and people who don't know me may think that this is a little extreme, but I set out to become the world authority on the best way to use ice. That was my goal. So I started reading, and I read, and I read thousands of articles, 13 clinical textbooks on the topics of tissue preservation and regeneration. That was my task. Go read everything you can on tissue preservation and regeneration. What that means is, how do you prevent tissue from atrophying, from failing, from wasting away, from suffocating and dying from congestion in and around the damaged site? And then how do you regenerate that which has been lost? So you start reading and you get into the process, and you realize that, uh-oh, what they're doing doesn't work. And I had a terrible moment, because just imagine you're a consultant like I am. I'm in the sports medicine field for over 40 years, but just imagine what it felt like when I realized that what they're doing is not only wrong, but it delays healing, it increases swelling, it causes additional damage, and it shuts off the signals that alert you to harmful movement, and you need the movement to solve the problem, and you need the signals to tell you which movements are wrong. Now, what do you do when you're me? When here you've got, let's just, you know, pick any Major League Baseball team, and they just spent $50, $75, $150,000 on icing products, because all the new stuff is here. There's one device where you can buy all the components that go with it. It's $15,000 just for one device. Some teams have 10 of those units.
Wow.
So imagine you're me, and you realize it's not only wrong, it's sending you in the wrong direction. So it doesn't. It's more than it just doesn't work. It's making things worse. Wow. I have to now walk in and say to that trainer, who has gotten to the top of the heap, in other words, the head trainer of a Major League Baseball team, of an NFL team, of an NBA team, of an NHL team, of a Major League Soccer team, or they're at one of the top training centers in the country. And if you ask around, I've been to nearly all of them. So here you are walking in and you're saying, look, when you use my product, you shouldn't ever do that. Now, how do you do that? How do you walk in and with any kind of reasonable opposition, walk in and say, what you're doing is wrong and harmful. And I know you've been doing it now for 25 years. I'm making up that number, but to get to the top of the heap where you're a head trainer of a major team, you didn't start yesterday. You've been around.
Yeah.
So here are all these people who are in the top of their field. There's only 123 head trainers in the four big leagues. And then you've got another less than 30 in for the soccer league. I think there's 26 teams now. I'm not sure of that number. I'm sorry, but I'm just not sure. They keep adding teams. So no matter what, it's less than 150 teams in the major leagues. And then there are only about 100 major training centers around the country. And that's about it. So you get to this spot where you're saying, I'm going to walk in and tell these people that what they're doing is wrong and they shouldn't do it anymore. Well, I started to say to people whatever they wanted to hear. So if they said, what should I do? And I'd say, well, don't use it before, don't use it during, And if you think you need to, use it after, but, you know, use your discretion and your knowledge and experience to use it after. And that's how I give the answer. And if they ask me more, well, what do you think? You think it's a good idea? Oh, now I'm going to answer. Yeah. And then all of my answers were consistent with what you asked me. So if you stayed very superficial, I stayed very superficial. If you went deep, I went deep because I knew a lot about the topic. Now, with that said, that's how I did it. That's it. I didn't go any further than you asked me to go. Mm-hmm. And then a gentleman by the name of Kelly Starrett, who's a doctor of physical therapy, who's very well known in the mobility world. He's one of the top people in the CrossFit world. And don't let that pull down on you, because some people don't like the CrossFit world, but there's some 15,000 CrossFit centers in the world, and Kelly Starrett is the top of their heap, but he's way more than that. He's written a book called The Supple Leopard, and very popular in the physical therapy, athletic training world. And I was asked to go and speak to Kelly at his request. And when I went to him, I started to explain things to him, and he kept asking more questions and more questions and more questions. And after about 10 minutes, he put his hand up in front of me. He's a big fella, and I'm not very big, but he's a big fella. And he put his arm up, and he's kind of like blocked my face, and he said, "Stop." And I went, "Oh, well, I guess that's all he wants to hear." And he said, "I get it. I'll never ice again. Please continue." Now, with that, Kelly, who has a very, very popular podcast, to date, over 250,000 people have seen the podcast that I did with him. He said, "You have to come on my show and tell everybody this." This is 6 years ago. I believe it's 6 years ago. It's somewhere around there. They date it on there if you go and pull it up. And I said, "Kelly, I can't do that. If I go on your podcast, I'll never be able to give my partial answer again. In other words, I won't be able to respond based on what you asked me to explain. You have already heard the whole story." And he said, "You have to do it." So I did it somewhat reluctantly, and having no idea that so many people were going to hear it that quick. I mean, we went 50,000, 75,000, 100,000, 150,000. And the views were not only being viewed in the large volume of numbers. So what ends up happening is we find out that the people who watch the video, the interview that I did with Kelly Starrett, they're each telling at least 10 people. And in cases, many more than 10, some people go like if a guy owned a gym, he told all his clients. And it was the talk of the town. It's what everyone was talking about wherever you went. And in fact, at one point, I was getting calls about 10 hours a week or more from people all over the country. And not only that, but from Canada and from other countries around the world. Now, there were dozens from around the world. Most were coming from the States. But nevertheless, they were coming in from all over the world, people asking me questions who owned those type of facilities that they work with athletes, and they wanted to know what's going on. What are you saying ice is wrong? How can it be wrong? What's what we all do? Well, at a certain point, you realize that you can't keep spending 10 hours a week answering the same questions over and over. And my son said to me, "Dad, you're going to have to write a book and just explain this." So I wrote a book called Iced, The Illusionary Treatment Option. Mm-hmm. And in that book, I explain the facts. So just here it is, and here's the documentation, and here is all the references. And with that, I find out that the godfather of the Ice Age, the Harvard-trained physician who literally invented the Rice Protocol, rest, ice, compression, elevation, that's what that means. The guy who invented it read my book and publicly recanted. Said, "Look, I made this up in my 1978 sports medicine book. Research has clearly shown I was wrong. Don't do it. It delays healing," and then gave a specific reference to the fact that it causes additional damage. Now, that's a big deal. You get the godfather of the Ice Age, the guy who invented the most known protocol in Western medicine, the Rice Protocol, and he publicly recants. Well, wait, there's more. He then went on to write the foreword to the second edition of my book. So the godfather of the Ice Age, the Harvard-trained doctor, made up the Rice Protocol that started this Ice Age mess, publicly recants and writes the foreword to the Anti-Iceman's book. Now, that's a big deal. And I challenge anyone who says, "Well,
who says you're right? Well, the guy who made it up said I'm right. But I'm not right. I'm just stating the facts. I'm an evidence-based reporter. I had no intention of proving that ICE is wrong. I nearly want to become the world authority on the topic of using ICE with damaged tissue. I did not have an agenda when I began to take ICE down. My goal was to help my customers better use my muscle activation device.
Sure.
So here you get to the, spot. Now what do? Now do you go tell everybody?
Well, hey, Gary, here's an interesting thing. The question I have is you've been doing this for now about 6 years. You wrote a book on it, and you've obviously been reached by a lot of people. Just recently, I went on the internet and looked at icing, and there's still people, medical people, that are advocating icing. How do we reach all these people? How do we convince them?
Well, I do it each day, and I have elected to do it one at a time, and individuals. So I target and I go and I target and I go. And for example, I have Major League Baseball teams where they've completely stopped using ice with their pitchers. Okay, that's a start.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have other teams who have stopped using ice altogether. And I work with over 100 professional athletic teams, and then I have several hundred universities, collegiate settings, universities, colleges. And I've just talked to people one at a time and explained it. And then, you know, they end up understanding, and then they tell someone, and then they tell someone. Now, have we turned the corner to where they're going to stop doing it? No. I just read an article last night that was sent to me by one of the people who I've explained things to and gets it. And he said, Gary, did you see this article? And I said, yeah, I actually read it. And he goes, they don't get it. And they don't get it because the people who are entrenched and got to protect their I'm really smart. I've been around a long time. Look at all my credentials. I'm telling you, it's the right thing to do. Well, hold on. Let's just take a breath. You know, don't get defensive. Tell me why you think it's the right thing to do. And then they'll say things like, well, it prevents inflammation. Well, first of all, it doesn't prevent inflammation. Okay? It merely delays the inflammatory response, but it doesn't prevent it. And more importantly, you don't want to prevent inflammation. Inflammation is phase one of three phases of healing. So it's inflammation, repair, remodel. You can look it up. You can Google it, and you'll see that there's three steps to healing, inflammation, repair, remodel. You can't really get to two and three without one. So here we have this problem where there is no defense if you're doing it to prevent inflammation because you want inflammation. And it doesn't prevent inflammation. It merely delays the inflammatory response. So it doesn't do what they thought they were doing anyway, nor should you do what they thought they should do. It's wrong. You don't want to prevent it. But more importantly, if you just ask a simple question, how much is too much? Is it 8% too much, 47% too much, 91% too much, or feet different than hands, or you different than me? How would you measure that? How would you know how much to prevent? Do you prevent it all? Is the inflammatory response always 100% wrong? So do you just block it? You see the problem? It doesn't work no matter how you think it through. Even if you thought you should do it and you were right, which you shouldn't do it, and it's wrong, you shouldn't do it. But let's just say you believe you should do it. Well, that's not how you do it anyway. It wouldn't work, and you wouldn't. How would you know if you did it right? And so now you get to the spot where you say, well, let's go look at what the textbooks say about the inflammatory response, how it works, and why it's needed. Well, you read that information, and you say, well, heck, you wouldn't want to block that. It's phase one of three phases of healing. And they'll say, well, I want to limit swelling, you know, prevent swelling. And you say, well, why would you want to prevent swelling? Oh, you don't want swelling. Swelling's bad. So every time a human being is injured, the wrong amount of fluid is sent to the damaged site by your innate intelligence. And you got to kind of think that one through for a second. Every time someone gets hurt, the wrong amount of fluid is sent to the damaged site. In other words, it's some arbitrary or chaotic event, and it's not well orchestrated by your immune system. It's doing it wrong every time. That to interfere with that, got to stop it. Well, that's just foolish to believe that. But let's just say you did believe it. Is it 18% too much, 97% too much, or feet different in hand? Same question with inflammation. How would you know how much fluid was supposed to go, and how would you know when you got to the right amount that you let get there? Or did you block it all? Did you block 100% of it every time? Well, let's just ask a question before we get crazy with this stuff. Why is the fluid sent there? What happens? Well, here's what happens. The damaged vessels constrict, and the healthy surrounding vessels dilate and increase perfusion. In other words, the fluid is sent there on purpose. The fluid is sent there to mobilize the repair and cleanup crew and to package the waste for evacuation via your lymphatics. It's sent on purpose. It's supposed to be there. Now, think about that. Do you honestly believe, anyone who's listening who's never thought about this before, do you honestly believe that your immune system, your innate intelligence, mistakenly sends an amount of fluid to a damaged site every time, and you need to stop it? Well, that doesn't even remotely make sense. But let's just say you were right, and you did need to stop it, and you're going to put ice on to stop it. When the tissue rewarms, the inflammatory response resumes, and the fluid comes. There's no evidence whatsoever in the literature that putting ice on damaged tissue limits swelling. And in fact, the opposite is true. There's plenty of information demonstrating that it actually increases swelling. And it increases for multiple reasons, but one of the reasons is that it causes a backflow from the lymphatic vessels into the interstitial space. So it actually causes a flow back from that which was already evacuated. And you say, well, who would do it if they knew it makes things that it makes it increase swelling when they're trying to decrease swelling?
Right.
Well, because they never thought it through. That's why they did that. But most importantly, you don't want to block the fluid being sent to the site. The right amount's being sent. Okay, I agree. There are times when people who are not otherwise healthy might send the wrong amount of fluid to the site. But the vast majority of otherwise healthy people, meaning athletic people, their immune system's sending the right amount of fluid. Get out of the way. Now, but then you might say, well, yeah, but you don't want too much swelling. Okay, so let's look at swelling. You're going to put ice on to get rid of swelling? Now, let's think that through. How does the waste evacuate? How does it get from the damaged site out? How does it get out? Well, it gets out via the lymphatic vessels, mostly. The particles are too big to go back to the venules, the end of the veins. They have to go back to the lymphatics. Well, the lymphatics is a passive system, nearly fully reliant upon muscle activation around the vessels to move the waste. In effect, it milks the cow backwards.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just think that through for a second. You're going to put ice on, and ice is going to shut off the signals between the muscles and the nerve. That's what it does. It shuts down the signal. That's why it works as a pain control device, which we'll get to in a second. So you shut it down. So now you shut the signals off between the muscles and the nerves. Now, in your most creative thinking, how could shutting off the signals between the muscles and the nerves possibly move waste through a passive system? How could that possibly work? Well, of course, it doesn't work. And that's why after some 40 years of widespread use, there's not a single article in the literature demonstrating that putting ice on damaged tissue gets rid of swelling. Of course it doesn't. Everyone knows that it doesn't. And they all pretend who support it, oh no, it's very good for swelling. Yeah, if you want to increase swelling, it's good. But for getting rid of it or blocking it, it doesn't do anything except make it worse. And then there are those who say, oh yeah, but it's good for pain control. Okay, so let me get this straight. You're going to put ice on somebody to make it not hurt so that they won't know if what they're doing to evacuate the waste is causing harm. In other words, you break your collarbone, so we put ice on it so you can't feel your broken collarbone. And now you fall asleep, and the whole time you're sleeping, you're distracting the fracture site. You're pulling it apart. Somebody out there in the medical world, tell me that's a good idea. But of course, that's a foolish idea. You would never want to shut the signals off to alert your harmful movement, and you need movement to solve the problem. So I liken putting ice on damaged tissue for pain control to the sympathetic bartender that gives you a drink so you can temporarily feel better. That's not solving the problem.
No.
And actually, you're making things worse. So here we've got this spot where we say, well, now, wait a minute. You don't want to block inflammation, and it doesn't anyway. You don't want to block fluid coming to the site, and it doesn't anyway. It actually adds more, not less. And it doesn't get rid of swelling, because it couldn't possibly do that. How could shutting off the signals between the muscles and the nerves possibly have ways to a passive system? That's not how the lymphatic system works. So that won't work. And you shouldn't shut off the signals to alert your heart for movement by making it cold, by making it numb, because then you won't know if what you're doing is hurting yourself. So what would you use it for? Well, there you go. There is no reasonable use of ice on a general basis, period, for damaged tissue.
Gary.
Now, you have people. Go ahead.
I got to ask you this because, we've got plenty of time, and I want you to keep going, but I want to ask you because, you know, I'm blown away, you know, from this factor. You've got a lot of passion. You've done a lot of research. You're talking about 40 years. You're talking about your book, Ice, which I want people to check out. We'll put it on our website, how to get the book, Ice, so they can Google it also. But what I'm blown away is we're in 2018. We're also one of the most technological, scientific country in the world. We can fly people to Mars, to the moon. We can do all kinds of things, and I'm blown away that we're still trying to figure out. Obviously, you're not figured out. You figured it out already, but we still have medical people out there still trying to figure out, is ice good or bad? How can this be?
Well, it's in my experience, it's this. They're simply ignorant of the facts. And what has happened was rice is nice. It rhymes. So anybody who went through the education process learned early on in their career and in their study that the rice protocol is what you do. Rest, ice, compression, elevation. That's what you do. And you learn it early on, basically in the first semester, and very often you know before you even get to college. And there you got this thing. It's put in place, and it rhymes. Rice is nice. Rest, ice, compression, elevation. Everybody's very proud of themselves when they memorize what the four things stand for.
Yeah.
And then they have to think about it again. They go on to learn more important things. Like, you know, I've got an athlete on the ground. He's not breathing. What do I do? And that's important stuff. You know, that's stuff that matters right now. Did you solve the problem or did the player die? Okay, so they worry about real stuff. You know, somebody's got a bone sticking straight out of the middle of their thigh, and there's a potential that they're going to bleed out. What are you going to do to stop that person from dying? That's big stuff.
Has there been a sport that's, you know, baseball is a very traditional sport. It's taken a long time to change in many things. You know, obviously you've changed major league teams' minds. Has there been a sport that's changed faster than others when it comes to eliminating ice? Is this also, is it a dollar issue? You know, because we've been using ice and ice sells, and, you know, do we not want to say that ice is bad?
Well, I think that the people, I'm reluctant to say this, but I'm going to. Here's what I've learned. The people who have invested a career icing their players aren't about to admit to you that what they've been doing with their multi-million-dollar athletes was wrong for 25 years.
True.
They won't do it. They can't. They just can't. They can't say to you, you know, I remember, you know, this player and whatever his name is. I remember this player and how he never really recovered from a hamstring pull. And boy, man, I just wonder if it was me icing him all the time. No one has ever said that to me. And that's the problem. You get these people, and on this topic, this is truly one of those 25-year experiences. They never went back and validated it. They never went back and checked it. They never went back and said, hey, is this working? They simply do it because everyone does it. Now you have a problem. So I go and talk to someone who's going to give a talk at a major meeting. And I've done this dozens of times. And I explain everything to them. I say, ask me any question you want. Say anything you want. And if I don't answer and prove to you what I'm saying is correct, out of the literature, and what you're saying is wrong, and I'll prove you what you're saying is wrong out of the literature, then I'll never say another word about this topic. You just come on and talk to me. And I've done it many, many, many dozens of times with people who are at the top of the heap as the communicators or the keynote speakers or the people giving the big lecture. And what happens is they go, oh, man. And you think for sure they're going to walk on stage, or they're going to go back to their team, and they're never going to use ice again because they get it. Well, no, that's not, they're not going to do that. They're not going to stand in front of their peers and say, look, I realize what I've been saying for the last 25 years and doing is wrong. You shouldn't do it. They're not going to do that. Now, Dr. Merkin did it, the doctor who made it up, which I find to be incredible, that the one of the most famous protocols in the world, and he did what he did, saying, I'm wrong, don't do it. But they're not going to stand in front of their peers and say, what I'm doing is wrong. And more importantly, they're not going to point to the room and say, and what you guys are doing, what you guys are doing is wrong.
Have you had blowback from, you know, organizations like the Athletic Trainers Association or medical industries? Have you had a lot of blowback, or has there been, you know, they've been working with you and understanding all this now?
I would say mostly they ignore me.
Wow. Amazing.
Now individual doctors sometimes will say, well, you know, I see what he's saying, but you know, I'm very comfortable and I've gotten very good results recommending ice for my patients. I was like, okay, well, that's not any different than the doctors who back at the turn of the century still weren't cleaning their tools when they were going from an autopsy over to a surgery, and they were causing the germs to go from the decayed dead body into the human who was alive they were trying to save, and they didn't realize that washing their hands and washing their tools would solve the problem. And yeah, that, you know, that's a very well documented point. You've seen that in my book, I suspect. Or the people who used to do bloodletting, they were certain that that was right, too. You know, oh, hey, there's something wrong here. Let's cut you in half and let the blood drain out. Well, come on. These mistakes go on in medicine. And when you ask people to stop doing what they're doing because it's wrong, they'd have to admit what they were doing is wrong. I actually had a head trainer come up to me recently. I was just at the National Athletic Trainers Association meeting last week. And we were filming with trainers who are on ice. In fact, the one trainer from the University of South Carolina, he has a talk that he gives called the Iceless Training Room. So this guy gets it. He really gets it.
Sure.
And this trainer walked by, who's now retired, and he said, hey, Gary, what's going on? I said, well, we're filming trainers who are going iceless in their training room. And he looked at me and said, well, you know I don't believe in that. And I said, doesn't matter if you believe me, you're retired, so I don't have to deal with you anymore. And now, that's not a nice or a mean thing, but that's what you deal with. I don't believe in that. What don't you believe in? If it were a debate, I would say, what don't you believe in?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you should put it on to block inflammation. Well, no, it doesn't do that, nor should you. To prevent swelling, if you put it on, there's proof it limits swelling. Well, hold on. Until the tissue rewarms, it doesn't block it, it delays it. And see, then they say things like, well, it doesn't slow down recovery. There's no evidence it slows down healing. Well, hold on a second. On one hand, they claim that if you put ice on, it slows the metabolic process and reduces fluid coming to the area, which, of course, by the way, reduces fluid leaving the area, which you wouldn't want to do, but that's what they do. Now, if you are doing something that's reducing the movement of nourishment and waste, do you think it would be reasonable to say that that would slow down healing? Well, no, they can't even admit that. They pretend that's not true. Oh, no, it wouldn't delay healing. Uh-oh, but let me get this straight. It slows everything down, but it doesn't delay. I looked it up, by the way, because I wasn't sure. Slowing down and delaying are basically the same thing, but their brains can't take it. It's too much for them. Now, those who get it and stop it, we're cutting recovery time based on their reports back to me. I have an article called Procrastination, a Fundamental Flaw in Injury Management. If you read that article, you'll see the claim that the doctor I make, who, by the way, this doctor is the former editor-in-chief of the Physician and Sports Medicine Journal, and now the editor, the orthopedic editor for the journal. So this is not a passing conversation with somebody in Shape magazine. This is a real article where we explain something. We're cutting the recovery time in half, the expected recovery time in half, because we don't do it wrong anymore. See, what they've done is they've convinced themselves that what they're doing is right, and therefore the consequences that come as a result of it, in other words, making things worse, not better, and delaying things, that's what they expect to happen. So they think that's normal. So if you ask them, well, how long does it take if you get hit by a foul ball in the middle of the shin, how long does that take? Oh, about 2 weeks. Okay, how about if I could show you how to make it go away in 3 days? And do it over and over and over and over and over again. Well, I'd get your attention, wouldn't I? I actually have emails with pictures from trainers with players hit by pucks and baseballs and things like that. Mm-hmm. Where the photo that I have that I'm thinking of right now, they have they sent me a picture of what he called the size of a tennis ball, a half a tennis ball on the guy's shin. And instead of doing what he normally would do, in other words, pack it in ice and compress it and wrap it tightly and sit still, he did what I said, which, by the way, is what the literature says to do if you want to solve that problem. And he sent me back a picture the next morning, and it was gone. And you say, come on, you couldn't do that in 1 night. No, it was gone. And he said to me, Gary, I just got to tell you, I'm amazed at how much this speeds up recovery. And I said, it doesn't speed things up. He said, oh, no, Gary, I'm telling you, this is normally days that this would – I said, no. All you did was now establish how long it's supposed to take.
Uh-huh.
It didn't speed anything up at all. See, what they were doing was making things worse. So they got so used to the negative reactions of doing it wrong that the 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 days that they were used to for a problem like that, they thought that was normal, when actually it should be gone the next morning. It's just waste. Here's a crazy one for you. Taking ice as a question, let's go to the rest of the rice protocol. The one more thing called compression, which is another fall, of course. And of course, the rest part is completely wrong. I don't know anybody who still supports resting injuries. When you rest, meaning you don't do anything, you atrophy, you shrink. And clearly, resting doesn't move waste through the lymphatic system and doesn't drive nourishment to the site. So we know rest is wrong. I don't think anybody argues that anymore. Mm-hmm. Well, if they do, don't even bother. But just walk away if they argue that. That's not even worth arguing. But compression is a big one where they all think you should compress. So let me talk you through this for a second. And everybody listening, if you wouldn't mind, take your right hand and put it around your left lower forearm. Now, let's say you're going to compress the area, and let's establish why you'd compress it. You're compressing it to limit swelling, which, of course, makes sense because you don't want too much swelling. So you're going to compress the area and you're going to prevent the flow in. Remember, that's the flow in that your immune system, your innate intelligence is sending there deliberately by dilating the healthy surrounding vessels and increasing perfusion. So that fluid which is being sent there that you're going to block is supposed to go there, but you're smarter than your immune system, your innate intelligence, so you're going to block it. And, of course, if I ask you how much you're going to block it, you don't have any idea how much you're going to block it, nor do you have any mechanism whatsoever to measure how much you're blocking it. But let's just say you're right, and you're going to block it a certain amount, and you know how much. Even though you can't measure it, you don't know how much is too much, and you don't know whether I'm different than you or whether feet are different than hands. But you're so smart, you're going to block it. Okay, so now take your hand, and please do this also, Peter. Take your hand and squeeze your forearm above your wrist area there, and tell me, as you're putting this compression on, are you compressing the in or the in and out vessels? In other words, are you able to compress only the in vessels, or are you forced to compress both the in and out because there's no way to compress only the in? Did not do it. Can you compress only the in? Answer me. I need to hear.
I can compress the in and the out, no?
Right. You can't possibly compress only the end.
No.
You have to compress both. Okay. So now let's just ask that question in reverse. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, everybody listen, especially if you're a licensed professional, listen right now because I'm going to blow your mind. here's what you're telling me you're deliberately doing. Trapping the waste in and around the damaged site. Now, everybody who's a clinician, tell me why you would ever, what possible advantage would there be to trapping the waste in and around the damaged site? By the way, I've asked thousands of people that question. Nobody's ever said that they think it's a good idea.
No,
and yet, today, if you went out and asked, I'm telling you right now that 99 out of 100 will compress a damaged site. But so until you ask the question in reverse, until you say, okay, let me make sure I understand. You're telling me you're going to deliberately trap the waste in and around the damaged site. Well, no, you wouldn't want to do that. That's what you're doing when you compress. You can't possibly compress only the in vessels. You're forced to compress the in and the out. Now, there'll be people who say, say whatever you want. There is no argument what I just said. It is impossible to compress only the in. You're forced to compress the in and the out because there's no way to compress any of the in. There's some 165,000 miles or more of lymphatic vessels in your body. They're superficial, intermediate, and deep. There is no way to compress only the in. You've got to compress the in and the out.
Gary, and that gets into what I want to get into next. I think it's going to be very important. You explained this extremely well, and I'm glad you did that. I know you have a product called Mark Pro. I want you to explain that product and understand that currently we are on Baseball Outside the Box. Welcome to all our Facebook. Thank you for being on. Thanks for all your messages. Also on YouTube. This is a great, great show, and I know we're going to get a great response from it. Gary, we've got people, you know, especially a lot of young coaches and coaches around the world and in the U.S. listen, watch the show. You know, I know you've got the product Mark Pro that now I want to get to a little bit of the solution also that can help. But at the same time, we're also going to get into for people that are in the youth programs, you know, that are the moms and dads. Sometimes, what are some of the options? And we'll get into that. But if you want, start with the Mark Pro. Let's discuss that and explain to the audience what you developed.
I'm happy to do that. So right now, in Major League Baseball, for example, I have confirmed there are over 200 Major League pitchers using Mark Pro. That is a fact. I emailed all the head trainers of all 30 teams, got 100% response, asked them to tell me how many pitchers were using Mark Pro. Now, if you're casually using it, didn't count. You had to actually be using it when you throw, okay? There are over 200 Major League pitchers. There's only 390, by the way. So we've passed the halfway point. Now, with that said, that doesn't make it right, okay? That doesn't mean, you should do it because the majors do it. In the minor leagues, I have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds more. In collegiate baseball, I have many hundreds more. And you say, well, this is starting to be a little bit of a trend here. I mean, the pitchers are getting it. A little while ago, you asked me a question, which sport was the most difficult to convert? And then I believe you then asked me who's been the easiest. By far, Major League pitchers have been the easiest.
Wow.
By far the easiest. Because what the pitchers did was they came to me when what they were doing wasn't working. So, see, that's a really good thing, because if what you're doing isn't working, you're willing to try something else without restriction. So just try it, because what I'm doing is not working. So I would ask them, what are you doing? They say, well, you know, when I'm done, I get a big ice pack all around my shoulder and my arm, and we wrap it real tight, and we sit still and kind of let it, chill out for, 20 minutes, 40 minutes, whatever they do. And I say, well, why do you do that? And they say, well, to help with recovery. And I say, well, how will that work? And because that basically stops the conversation right there, because I've never met anybody that knew how that would work. Because, by the way, it doesn't work. So you can't ever explain how that would work. They say, it increases circulation because it makes it real cold. And then when you take it off, it increases circulation to get warm again. Okay, that made a lot of sense. So I'm going to depress an area, and then I'm going to allow it to breathe again. What? Well, no, that's what they think they're doing. So that's one of the things. Oh, it increases circulation. Well, I thought you didn't want to increase circulation. I thought the reason you were doing was to limit circulation. Oh, no, you want circulation afterwards. Well, then why did you want to do it? Well, to limit circulation. And you get them in the spot where they're like, you just told me you didn't want to limit it. You want to increase it. Well, yeah, but you want to flush it all out. So you think that making it cold flushes it out? How do your lymphatic systems work? Are pitchers different than the whole rest of the planet? Because everybody else, the lymphatic system is a passive system, nearly fully relying upon muscle activation around the vessels to move the waste, in effect, milking that cow backwards. So everybody else has to activate the muscles around it, and you're shutting off the signals between the muscles and the nerves. So how would that possibly move the waste through the lymphatic system? Oh, they said. And then I would say, so what are you trying to do? They said, we're trying to recover. And I said, okay, now recover. What does that mean to you? I need to know what it means to you. Well, you know, I want the tissue to be all repaired. You know, I want it to be like before. Okay, so we want it to heal. Well, yeah, I want it to heal. I want it to heal. Okay, so let's look at what it takes for tissue to heal. Nowhere, anywhere, in even the worst clinical evidence can you find that sitting still with a bag of ice wrapped tightly around your shoulder will facilitate tissue regeneration. It is utterly ridiculous to even pretend that that's legitimate. It's completely wrong. So the first thing I would tell all of the people who are listening who are involved with pitchers, or for that matter, any musculoskeletal damage, because whether it's slight damage from throwing a baseball or significant damage from, say, getting crushed by a foul ball off the plate on your shin, it doesn't matter what caused the damage. Damage is damage, and we heal the same. Now, with that said, let's just stop for a second and say, well, what should a pitcher do if they don't do that? Because you got to do something if you don't do that, right? And what I say, well, there's only one way to make that worse. In other words, sitting still with a bag of ice wrapped tightly around your arm, the only thing you could do worse would be to beat that area with a ball peen hammer while you're sitting there. Okay? That's completely, by the way, don't anyone do that. That's not a good idea. Don't beat it with a ball peen hammer. But it's about the only way you could make it worse. Now, with that said, what would make it better? Just don't do that. Don't sit still with a bag of ice wrapped tightly around your arm. Now you're better off. Now, so what should you do? Well, what you should do is learn a little bit about how tissue regeneration and tissue preservation work. And it's not complicated. You can read my book. It's very simple. You can read some of my articles. You can figure it out from there. Or listen to podcasts that I do. It's very simple to understand. When you activate your muscles, that brings in the good guys and helps flush out the bad guys. Simultaneously, it causes the muscles to produce and release what are called myokines that drive or mediate that tissue regeneration process. Now, with that in place, if there has been significant damage, the reorganization of that repaired tissue is necessary. That's the fourth step. So it's good stuff in, bad stuff out, production release of the myokines, and the reorganization of the repaired tissue. All of that is contingent upon stress, not on stillness, but on stress. And if you want to read about that, simply Google my name, go to my website. All my articles are free at the bottom of my page. Just click them and you can read them. And you can read and learn that, well, wait a minute, sitting still, stillness is the enemy. Uh-huh. And sitting still with something wrapped tightly around your arm that's cold is even worse. So just stop doing that and then start activating your muscles. Now, when I grew up in the 60s. And I never heard of icing anything or compressing anything. Nobody ever said to do that. You know, if somebody had a bad cut or something, they might say, you know, put some pressure on to stop the bleeding. But nobody ever said, you know, compress your ankle if you rolled it. And they certainly never said to put ice on it. Everyone that I knew growing up in the 60s said, walk it off. Don't sit still. It'll tighten up. You got to keep moving it. And anyone who's my age will tell you their coaches told them, to walk it off. Don't sit still, it'll tighten up. And we all knew that. And I'm often asked, well, do you think that started in your father's generation? And no, it didn't start in my father's generation. It started in the beginning of time. We are designed to self-repair, not self-destruct. If you're self-destructing, figure out why and make a change. If you're sitting still with a bag of ice wrapped tightly around your arm, you are self-destructing. That's wrong. So what would be right? To not sit still, to not compress the area, and to not make it cold, and to activate the muscles. So if you're talking about a pitcher, they can do shoulder shrugs, they can squeeze a ball, you know, whatever, to activate the muscles that are tired and sore. Now, is that the easiest, best way? No. No, the easiest, best way is something like the Mark Pro. That's why the players are using it so much. And the reason that it's easy to use is you point to the muscle that's tired and sore, you find the most dense area of that muscle, you put the pad on, you turn the dial, and it activates the muscle for you. So you don't have to do anything. So it's clearly a wonderful tool for ease of operation and simplicity. Now, with that said, what if you can't afford it or you don't have one?
Right.
You can, you know, whatever reason, you can't get one. Stop icing, stop sitting still, and stop compressing the area.
Okay.
So that's the best thing I can tell you to do. That will improve your outcome. Now move the best you can. Activate the muscles the best you can. And that will produce a positive result. Maybe not as good as Mark Pro, but it'll produce a positive result, far more positive than sitting still with a bag of ice wrapped tightly around your arm.
Sure. Now, Gary, a lot of coaches or a lot of experts, you know, they have guys doing sprints, running after they pitch. You know, and again, I know the Mark Pro is the fastest way, but is running and sprinting, is that the same as walking it off?
Yes, I guess if you're running and sprinting on your hands.
No.
When you run and sprint on your legs, it's your legs. And a lot of guys, by the way, a lot of pitchers do have a lot of soreness in their hips, their legs, and their lower torso. So, yes, it would be very effective for that. Does that help much with your arm and your shoulder? Yes, some, because when you're running, you know, there's activation of those muscles when you're running. That's a tried and proven way, and it does work. I would say it is far more effective for people who have lower body muscle activates, you know, people who need to activate their lower body, running and sprinting and things like that will be very effective. If you're doing it for your upper body, it's sort of like if you put Mark Pro on your legs, it's not going to help your shoulder very much.
Sure.
Will it help your shoulder? I mean, I guess a little, but not very much. Now, if you put it on your shoulder, it's going to help your shoulder more. Well, the same thing with running. It's mostly your legs and your torso. It's not your shoulder and your arm, but there is some. So yes, it does some benefit.
Now, if you get hit by a pitch in the lower extremities, in the you know, quads or hamstring, you get hit in the thigh. That's the concept that you mean. Some movement and jogging or running might help that.
Well, I have a simple rule that I believe anyone can use, whether you're sophisticated medical professional or just somebody who doesn't know anything about the topic. Yep. My rule is use your brain, never cause pain. So activate the muscles in and around the damaged site, but if it's causing pain, get a different plan.
Sure.
So it's a simple rule. Use your brain, never cause pain. And if you do that and you activate the muscles, that's what drives the healing process. So in my articles, you'll see I always reference an article from the Journal of Orthopedic Research or the Journal of Orthopedic Medicine. And that article is called Loading. And today there are many articles on the topic of the value of loading tissue or stressing the tissue or activating the muscle to facilitate healing. But in 1999, a guy named Buckwater wrote the article called Loading. And in the article, he makes a very clear point. And he says, look, this is one of the most important discoveries of the century. And the discovery was that loading, stressing, damaged tissue facilitates the healing of muscle, bone, ligaments, tendons. And I suspect if Dr. Buckwater were writing that article today, and if he didn't know, if him and I had a 3-minute conversation, he would have added skin, because it's all the same. The stress is what facilitates the healing. And the healing is mostly driven by decongesting the area. In other words, if you look at anybody who's hurt in any way, I don't know anyone who wouldn't say this. I honestly don't. I don't think I'd have anyone argue this. Once the swelling's out, you're better off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, simple question then. How do you evacuate swelling? How does that work? And when you look and you learn how swelling actually moves along the system, you know, it's not magic. It doesn't go into this air. You know, like your ankle's swollen or you're hit by a pitch in the shin. It's swollen. You can see it. There's blood. There's fluid. It's swollen up. it doesn't magically disappear. It's not, you know, evaporating. It's absorbed by your system. It's brought back to your lymphatic system. Those particles are too big to go back to your venules. They got to go back to your lymphatic vessels. Your lymphatic vessels are a passive system, nearly fully relying upon muscle activation around those vessels. So activate the muscles around those vessels, and you'll milk the cow backwards. The waste will evacuate. If you don't activate the muscles around those vessels, the waste will sit there. And I don't know what it's so. You don't even. You could learn what I just told you in less than 3 minutes by simply Googling how's the lymphatic system work.
Yes.
That's how it works. That's it. That's how it works. So sitting still, you'll remain swollen much longer. And here's the problem with sitting still. When you sit still, you're not bringing in the repair and cleanup crew, and you're not evacuating the waste. So what you've done is you've compromised or you've extended the recovery or healing process. And anybody who can consider arguing what I just said, take a breath and go reread your textbook, because you know what you said is 100% true. And so the defense is sometimes, well, it's more complicated than that. Well, you know what? It might be more complicated. I mean, we can get the same big words like macrophage and neutrophils and insulin-like growth factor and stem cells. And you can use all these big words and angiogenesis, and you can use all those words. But the facts are, until you decongest the area, healing's compromised. So the only thing that I ever want to know is, when you're hurt, can we decongest the area? When can we start decongesting the area? What do we got right now? I just had a guy get a new ankle, one of the trainers from a team that I know. They put a new ankle in. It's a new ankle. They cut off the lower shin bones, and they cut off the top of the ankle bone, and they put a new ankle in. So they put rods in both directions, and they snapped in an ankle. It's unbelievable, actually, if you never saw one. You know, I didn't know you could do ankles, but they did a whole new ankle for him. And he had the swelling under control within 4 days post-op. Within a week post-op, I have the pictures. Within a week post-op, there's virtually no swelling. Now, there's still some blood. There's still some bruising around the area, and the wound is not fully healed. But the congestion is out. Now, why does that matter? If the congestion was still there, you would suffocate and kill otherwise perfectly healthy cells that were not involved in the initial trauma. That is a fact. They will suffocate and die. They were misnamed. The idea was misnamed by a guy back in 1974. Won't bother saying his name because there's no point in causing friction like that. But this guy said that it's called secondary cellular death. And in other words, it's secondary to the surgery. So you have the surgery, and you're going to have swelling that will suffocate and kill otherwise perfect healthy cells, and that's to be expected. No, it's not. That's utterly foolish to believe that. Now, in 74, he didn't know what I know. So it's not fair to compare what he said it was to what I say it is, because I have all that information that came from 74 that he didn't have. Mm-hmm. But his belief is rampant throughout the system, as bad as the Rice protocol, the secondary cellular death nonsense. It's not secondary cellular death. It's primary to the congestion. You get the difference? If it's secondary to the surgery or the trauma, it's inevitable. It's going to come. If it's primary to the congestion, if you get rid of the congestion, it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. Now, just thinking to yourself, which do you think would be better? To leave it congested and have otherwise perfectly healthy cells that were not involved in initial trauma suffocate and die? Or to decongest the area and that not happen? Well, come on. Is this really a fair question? Of course you wouldn't want it to happen. Well, they let it happen all the time because they believe it's secondary cellular death. Now, I have an article, though, if you go to my website, you can pull it up without my website, by the way. It's called Secondary Cellular Death is Actually Negligent Homicide. And in that article, I explain it and give all the details and all the references. By the way, my articles are always written so you can read them, but then I give you the articles that I'm referencing, and then I give you a reading list of what I read so that I could write the article. So unlike a lot of people, when you read their stuff, you have no idea why they're thinking what they're thinking. I'm showing you, I'm reporting what the literature says.
Yeah.
So you get to the spot where you say, well, wait a minute. If you don't decongest the area, you're going to have cells suffocate and die? Of course. And because of the lack of movement, because of all that congestion in the area, that makes it hurt. And then that pain stops you from moving and doing things, which then causes faulty scarring and what is called disuse atrophy. So the muscles begin, the ligaments, the tendons, the vessels around the area begin to shrink or atrophy. So if you get the congestion out, you don't suffocate and kill otherwise perfect healthy cells, you don't have the faulty scarring, and you don't have the downstream disuse atrophy. Now, just thinking as yourself, and I don't believe you're a clinician, but just think this through, you've been around. Which would you rather have? An athlete who has a significantly swollen area, full of blood and debris, week on end, 2 weeks, week, 3 weeks, 2.5 weeks, whatever it is, or somebody who's virtually decongested in the first 24 to 48 hours. Which would you rather work with? Somebody who has cells dying continually for weeks after the trauma, who has faulty scarring as a result of the lack of movement, who has pain that's completely unnecessary, and who's suffering from disuse atrophy in the entire region. Which would you rather rehab? Wait, which would you rather be? Well, who would ever pick the I want everything to be bad. I want it to be swollen. I want to suffocate and kill. I want faulty scarring. I want disuse atrophy. Nobody would pick that. Well, then why do you procrastinate? Why don't you begin to move that waste immediately post-trauma, post-surgery? Why don't you move it right away? Why do you let it congest?
Hmm.
Well, there's no excuse. There's no reason. It's just they always did that. That's why the article is called Procrastination, a Fundamental Flaw in Injury Management. It's a fundamental flaw. Now, is that all part of the Rice Protocol? First word of the Rice Protocol, rest. In other words, procrastinate. That sit still. Let's give it a chance to heal. We need to let the area calm down. Have you heard these things? Audience, have you heard that? Oh, you got to give it a chance to calm down. Let's give it a chance to heal. Then we'll start. We'll talk about tomorrow or a couple days. No, that's completely 100% wrong. Don't do that. Go at it right now. Don't procrastinate. Stay in the now. Look and say, what's happening? Well, I've got bleeding that's now stopped. The bleeding is stopped within a few minutes, by the way. So you have that black and blue area, right? And then you have the swelling starts to accumulate, and you're watching it happen in front of your eyes, and you say, well, we'll deal with it tomorrow. Why? Why don't you deal with it right now? It's just waste. Your lymphatic system's fully intact. It'll work. Why don't you facilitate the movement of that waste by, in effect, walking it off? Why don't you do that?
Yeah.
Well, they don't do it, but they should do it, but they don't do it. Now, the people who I work with, they do it, and they're cutting recovery time in half. Not because they're speeding up recovery, but because they're limiting the loss.
Yeah.
Entirely different comments. I don't want some doctor going, oh, the guy says he speeds up healing. I don't speed up healing. I limit the loss.
Yeah.
That's all. That's all we're doing. We're limiting the loss, which is completely reasonable and goes back to the centuries old idea of walking it off.
Yeah. Gary, this has been, let me tell you something, this has been outstanding. I am so thrilled that we did this talk and this interview. One of the areas, you never know, I may get a lot of responses, and the next show might be a great debate between you and somebody, some expert that believes opposite. I'd love to hear it, because I can't see. Everything I heard was outstanding, and all the research I've done shows exactly what you're talking about. And don't forget, folks, on Facebook, go to Gary. Now, it's pronounced Reinl, but it's reinl.com. Gary, reinl.com is his website. Check it out. He's got great stuff. It's free. Also, he is the Ant-Man, the anti-Iceman. I almost called you the Ant-Man. That's a famous show coming up. But I get a feeling that the more you get out there, the more famous you're going to become, because you really are bucking the system. And I'm glad you're doing it, because you're bringing out the truth. Go to Twitter at the anti-Iceman and check out Gary. He's available if you have any questions for him. Gary, again, I just want to thank you. We're going to put everything on our show notes. If there's anything that we missed, because that you think that our audience really needs to hear, you've got some time, a minute or two here to go. If not, I just want to thank you for being on the show, because it's been outstanding.
Yeah, I do want to say something at the end there, and I appreciate you saying that somehow I may end up famous. I have no interest whatsoever in being famous. I have, and if you follow me, you'll see that I just simply don't do that. I'm a reporter. I'm a very organized reporter. I bring information that I put together, and I try to present it in a way that you can follow it. A simple idea to put into everybody's head is this. If you knew it was going to snow 24 inches in the next 24 hours, if you knew that,
mm-hmm.
1 inch per hour, it's coming. If every hour on the hour you would open your front door, with a good stiff broom, you could effortlessly keep that 1 inch of snow off your sidewalk. If, however, you wait till morning and open your door to 24 inches of angry snow, I assure you, it will not be effortless, and you will not clear a good stiff broom.
Hmm.
So don't procrastinate.
Yeah.
Solve the problem now. Stay in the now and solve the problem. Now, with that said, some people will ask me, will you make it sound so simple? Here's the great news. If it wasn't simple, we likely wouldn't still be here as a species.
Mm-hmm.
We are designed, the human body is designed to self-repair, not self-destruct. If it's self-destructing, figure out why and make a change. The change here is that active recovery is the answer. I call it ARETA, doesn't matter what you call it, but ARETA is active recovery is the answer. It's the first letter of those words. Active recovery is the answer. Walking it off is the answer. The answer is not sitting still with a bag of ice wrapped tightly around your body part. That's not how you're going to solve the problem. So with that, if anybody has any questions or they'd like to know anything, I try to answer all the emails that come to me. It may take me days sometimes after a show like this, but I promise I will answer any reasonable question or provide any references. Of course, all the references are in my book and on my website, so you can get stuff easy like that. I'm not interested in becoming famous. I'm interested in giving the opportunity to someone that otherwise might be deprived of their opportunity to compete. And fast point on that. Imagine if you were the trainer that continually iced someone that never made it to the top of their ability. So they high school to college, college to the pros, whatever it was. But you mismanaged them. And now you've got to admit, gosh, I wonder if what I did caused this individual to not have their opportunity. I don't care if you win or lose. That's not my goal. I want you to be able to compete at your best. So bringing down the ice age, that's all I care about. I don't care who gets credit for it. And I shouldn't get credit. I'm just a reporter. I didn't do any of the research, by the way. I just report the facts. So I don't want credit. I simply want the ice age to stop so that everybody has the chance to compete at their highest level and that you don't lose because you didn't compete. You lose because you weren't the best. That's all I care about. If you come in second place, you know what? Did you do your best? Yes, sir. Awesome. Perfect. That's all I want to hear. I don't want to hear that you did not compete at your best because you were mismanaged, because the trainers, the people around you, were needlessly, falsely icing you.
Gary, listen, to all our coaches around the world, you know that we are the show that encourages to have an open mind, to always do your homework. We want to thank you, first of all, for challenging the status quo. You know, what you've done is fantastic. Thanks for being on. All right. Special thank you to Gary Reinell. Check out his book, Ice, The Illusionary Treatment. Don't forget, he is on GaryReinell.com. That's R-E-I-N-L. And he's also on Twitter, at The Anti-Iceman. Don't forget to check out Baseball Outside the Box. Join the show. Give us a star rating if you love the show. Really helps the show get out. Don't forget to email me at PeterCaliendo@iCloud.com or info@baseballoutsidethebox.com. Thank you to all our listeners in the U.S. and around the world listening to Baseball Outside the Box. We love you. Thanks for listening to the show. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Have a great coaching day and see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.